Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. New and improved, new and revamped. The jump from associateship to ownership. That's kind of the title today. And really what we're going to talk about, because I'm excited because I got Dr. J here, Dr. Jackson Hall, my current associate.
Hello.
Soon to be former associate, probably by the time this comes out. Jumping from associateship to ownership. So I'm excited for you to take this leap. Are you excited?
Pretty excited.
I mean, I'm bummed because I have to replace you, which is always the blessing and the curse, I guess, of this whole thing. But I'm more excited for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little nerve-wracking.
I can't kick this cough. It's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, a little nerve-wracking. You also realize, like, how much y'all did as owners versus, like, when you're an associate and you just got to do the dentistry. Now that you start seeing all the little things that you don't, you're just like, oh, I had no idea.
So we're going to jump into this. And the things I want to talk about are, you know, at what point did you know, hey, I think I want to do my own thing. I mean, you've kind of always known that. We'll talk about that a little bit. Then I want to talk about like the decision to do it, the process of finding somewhere. And, you know, and then I kind of want to touch base on like the big takeaways you take from us and the big fears that you have moving forward. That'll kind of be what we want to do. Before we get started, though, I do want to remind everyone that May 4th and 5th in Nashville, Tennessee, we got the inaugural 3D Dentist Summit, which we're super pumped about. Six speakers ranging in all types of practice growth topics. We've got a really cool special guest who's going to be kicking off and then emceeing throughout the 2 days. So definitely try to make that a point to get here because it will be something you do not want to miss. I can promise you that. We're excited about it. Okay, so you know you graduate, you come in with us. Obviously, we had known each other, you know, family, you know, almost like family than anything, and it's been great. I mean, this year you did $700,000 for the practice in your first full year, which is, I think, and good dentistry. And I think for an owner, that's exactly what you want. But you know, obviously we had conversations about you wanting to own from the get go. So talk about kind of, I guess, at what point did you decide, hey, I'm ready, or I want to take that leap? Or, you know, for the people out there that are associates, they're like, you know, when is the time to make the jump if you want to take the jump?
Well, I feel like, I mean, we were pretty open, right? You know, when we interviewed, I said, hey, long term, it's ownership or bust, whether it's in a partnership or whatever. After the first year, I was starting to get the itch. Just now, again, I could sit here and watch you guys kind of go through the mastermind and all that and see y'all and have all the fun that you guys get to have. And I was always like starting to be like, man, I want to be a part of that. That looks awesome. Because I see how a lot of those docs come away and they just feel like their mind is just blown and they're really excited for all that. And there's some sort of rush there. And I see that and I want to, you know, do that. Also, as a part of just like lifestyle, which so we live right now, obviously we work in Brentwood,
which is a suburb right outside of Nashville. So essentially we're in Nashville.
Yeah. Which I'm from here and so are you.
Yep.
But I decided, you know, I wanted to move out farther away to a small city and kind of get away from some of the big city stuff. And that was kind of like a lifestyle change I wanted to make for my kids and my family. And I want to say that was around September that I started thinking about that with my wife. Cause I think it was around October when I told you, I said, hey,
yeah,
I'm going to look for a small town and I'm just going to kind of, I mean, I'm going to buy and be an owner, but I want to move out too. So that was kind of
what I figured that was, I had to play part of it because you never really brought up being a partner at that point. Like there was never a conversation of like, hey, I want to be a partner versus I want to go do my own thing. I mean, it seems like for you, it was kind of, and part of that probably is because, you know, being a partner here means you can be an equity partner, but your ability to pull the levers is going to be still subdued to where it's your own spot. Is that fair?
You know, for one thing, obviously, like I'm not going to come in here where you've got all the experience and you've already built all this and try and change things. And I don't really have the intention to do that actually. But part of it's like, you've already built Camelot. So it's kind of like, well, like I want to go try and build that.
Yeah.
Like I didn't want to walk in and cause then, you know, forever and always, there would always be a part of me that say, could I have done
it? You're kind of in the shadow.
Yeah. And then the other part was a big part was, and you know, this, like, I want to be out, I want to have land, I want to get away from it all. That's just, it's just the way I want to live.
So I thought what, you know, and again, from day one, we've had these conversations, and I think it's good. It's a catch 22. And we had this conversation kind of off air a second ago, talking with, about one of my buddies, Will Jones, and his associate leaving, and just the catch 22 of like that openness and transparency, the owner doc wanting to be more prepared to replace the associate, because we have to replace that somehow, but the associate not wanting to be like cut off from that. And I think we've handled that pretty well. I mean, you were honest with us and said, hey, I want to start looking, you know, and originally your timeline was kind of more like
May, June,
6 to 8 months type stuff. Yeah. So that was kind of like, okay, well, we'll start to look, or at the time, you know, we've already hired Sarah. So maybe like that's a good transition. But what I've learned from T-Bone is that, you know, it's always good to kind of have some level of redundancy or start to get your options open. So we put an ad out, so that we kind of already had an ad out, I guess, because we were looking for someone to do some more advanced type stuff. So we kind of started looking, and then we had a couple of people, but we really weren't interviewing anybody, I guess, until you then kind of said, hey, by the way, I've got a practice that I think I want y'all to look at that I think is pretty legit.
Yeah.
And then, so talk about, how'd you find that practice? Like, how does that even work these days?
Well, remember there was that first practice we looked at together.
Oh, that's right.
So, you know, first one I decided, hey, you know what? I do think I want to move out into a smaller area. I'll start looking for practices. The one practice in Franklin came available, which is only 10 or 15 minutes south of here. So not quite as far out as I was looking, but I'm from Franklin. So it was kind of like, well, we'll look into it. And after we looked at it, it was a good practice, but it just ultimately wasn't the right one for me. So actually a rep for Benco, contacted me and let me know about, hey, you know, I know you've always been kind of mentioning getting out. There's a practice here, in an area about an hour and 20 outside of Nashville. The owner is having health problems, and at this point he's struggling. And so if you wanted to do this, you ought to go meet with him, talk to him, and look into it. So I went out there, I think I told y'all about it. And then I went out there and met him, talked to him, and you know, he was having a tough time.
It's obviously terrible and unfortunate for them, but it's kind of the ideal situation that you'd like to find. From a standpoint of like, hey, they've got a sense of urgency, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it was knowing what we know now, or what I know now and have learned, like it, I see all the problems of the guys I know who have bought a practice, but they went and worked under the current owner doc for 6 months or a year or whatever. Cause you start to butt heads a little bit when you know that the writing's on the wall.
Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse, yeah. I think.
And so in a situation like this, where again, I'm not straight out of school, I had the blessing to come here and learn from you guys for, you know, 18 months, and start to see how I would want to do things, what worked, what didn't work. Now being able to go into a situation like that and there be a smooth transition in terms of he'll be there, but when I get out there, I mean, he's out day one. It's a little bit scary, but at the same time, I'm not worried about it from a sense of not knowing what to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, so after meeting with him, you know, it was kind of a fire sale. So we kind of agreed to a price based on everything. And we both agreed that, you know, or he asked that it happened very soon. And I was kind of like, well, that's a lot sooner than my timetable.
Yeah.
That's where I came back to you guys, and you're like, well, hey, we've got this person we're going to interview. Let's interview her.
Yeah. Because we had been, I would say, like, not sitting on our hands a little bit, but just like, you know, we had some good candidates, but they didn't, it was kind of like, okay, well, let's just wait. And then, then it worked out, obviously, once I was like, okay, well, that's a legitimate option. That there's the potential you're legitimately gone in January. Mm-hmm. We should interview her. And so we can talk more about that second. But yeah, so keep going. So you decide. Numbers are checking out. Things are looking good. How many ops? How many employees?
Four ops. Currently down to four employees. Two part-time hygienists, one assistant, and one front office manager.
So basically, one hygienist, one assistant, and one front office. Essentially, when you add the part-timers in. So, which honestly is a great. I mean, that's a good practice. And what was the practice doing in its prime before health issues?
So I'm going to say collections were around 850. So a good solid one doc practice, you know, right where you want it to be from an old school standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's good. Cause you know, the thing I worry about sometimes is, and what I'm excited about for you is it's harder for our generation to buy a practice that's not in its prime. and see like the remodel work, like the DIY part of it. And that's where the value is, you know? Yeah. I mean, when you could take a practice that has, I mean, you're, it's going to suck, frankly, because you're going from, I mean, we've got pretty much all of it. I'm a hashtag humble brag, but we do. And for the most part, and then you're going to go to something that has, I mean, do they have film x-rays or do they have digital x-rays?
They do have digital x-rays. They do have digital
paper
x-rays.
Charts or?
And no, they are digital. They've got EagleSoft. So, they're not
completely digital x-rays, digital charts, air driven hand pieces though. Yeah. No real technology outside of the digital x-rays and stuff. So, I mean, that's an ideal practice, I think, to take over and buy, you know, and obviously walk through a little bit of how you valued it versus like valuing like the technology that you're going to want to like put into it. Cause it's got, I'm assuming it has a pan.
Yes.
So and to give, I guess, the listeners, you know, more insight, like, you know, we practice with CEREC, 3D technology, intraoral, I mean,
we have every, you
know, DSLR cameras and that sort of thing. So talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, again, it's like everything that I want to do, I'm basing on kind of what we do here. Obviously, it's unrealistic to think you're going to take out a loan big enough to buy a practice and implement all that at once, which part of that's my question for you, or one of them is like, where do you come in day one? And so let's back up a little bit. So the first practice we looked at, you know, in Franklin together, it was running, you know, well oiled machine. He was maximizing everything, at least for bread and butter dentistry, but he was doing, you know, well, and the price reflected that he wanted.
You were going to pay a premium for what? For that practice.
That's right. With no technology other than the very, very, very basics. This one, because he's not maximizing, because he's struggling.
And location. Like, it's not as desirable for the masses.
It's not Franklin, Tennessee. But, you know, obviously getting it at a substantially lower price. But I'm more excited about that because that allows me to, right from the get-go, take out a loan, you know, a loan that would have been equivalent or maybe even less than what I was going to take out for Franklin, bring in CEREC day one, bring in a cone beam day one, bring in DSLRs day one. And somewhere in there, I have to draw a line and say, okay, well, some of this doesn't make sense to do. And some does, obviously. Like, I think you would agree. And that's what I've taken away from you guys. Like, first off, if you don't have like a DSLR and a cone beam, like, what do you even do? Like, you can't, there's so much dentistry you can't even do nowadays versus, you know, like, molar root canals, no problem, you know, implants, no problem. And all these things that the cone beam allows us to do from a diagnostic standpoint. But there are certain other things, like obviously, like you say, we have every piece of technology known to man here. You know, we have spaceship chairs from Dennis Lysorona. Yeah. So whereas this, you know, we're still, his chairs, they may be even hydraulic at this point. I don't know. You know, so it's like,
you got to put oil in them.
Yeah. So where do you draw the line between, hey, let's go ahead and get some new updated stuff. Or, hey, you know what? These things are, they're still working, so let's slap a motor on them and call them electric and make it work.
Well, first piece of equipment you buy is?
For me, the cone beam. I know you guys would say DSLR.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, so and both of those kind of go hand in hand, and they're for different purposes, right? So what's the purpose? Why would I say DSLR?
Patient education.
Yeah. So that to me is that's the patient getting involved in the buying process, right? And then the cone beam is then for us and our ability to, because as for someone like yourself who has the skill set to do implants and has the skill set to do root canals, like now you're talking, okay, well, I can't necessarily, you don't know how to do implants without cone beam.
Yeah, nor would I want to.
Yeah. And like, and really you've never done root canals outside of maybe dental school without cone beam. So to me, those are like, well, now all of a sudden I'd be handicapping my ability to produce. So those are like no brainers that I've got to have.
Yeah. I mean, we went to the same dental school. We had the same, probably similar experiences. And then to come out and go right into molar endo, you know, and be finding an MB2 with no concerns because you got a cone beam. I mean, you know right where it is. It's just, it's like cheating compared to dental school. And it's like, I understand all the people who don't like doing molar endo who've never had a cone beam. But once you have it, then you know, you can see the ones you don't want to tackle and that you want to refer. And so, and that's a simple one that you don't even need all the extra training like implants for. Implants is obviously a big one, but you do need additional training for that.
Yeah. What questions you got over there?
So the big thing is, you know, when you're buying a practice, obviously you have the practice amount you're paying. Let's call that X. And let's say you get a situation like I'm in where you're getting a pretty good deal in terms of what this practice should be worth. Should it be running well, still based on the current technology and what he's doing? So you obviously, in my case, I'm going to take out additional money but where to spend it first. That is to say, like, I don't want to take out $1 million on a practice that's probably only worth
a couple hundred grand.
Even though, I mean, I would like to build it to that point. But obviously, like you say, Conebeam, and for me, Sarah, because at this point, I don't even want to do crowns if I don't have Sarah.
Yeah, it's hard to go back.
Yeah.
Once you're there.
Making temporaries just makes me quiver at this point. Or at least putting them on and then getting called in to put them back on.
Yeah.
So where do you spend the money early on in terms of other than buying the practice? Like, so when you go to update, what's your, other well, than
I
DSLR?
Think, I mean, I think what we just touched on was obviously, I think, to me, DSLR camera is number one. Because right then and there with that camera, I should be able to do more dentistry on the patients that I have than have been being done. Because these patients haven't seen all this stuff. And you're going into a practice that most likely has giant patch, big MODBL amalgams for days.
Yeah.
And so when you can show patients what all is going on with recurrent decay and cracks and stuff like that, outside of a intraoral camera where they don't even know what they're looking at, then you're going to close more dentistry. So to me, that's an easy one. Conebeam, I think, is one. Ultimately, when I look at equipment in general, whether it's like a startup or a virtual startup, which is kind of like what you're doing, is to me, it's just a cash flow issue, right? It's like, okay, well, how much do I need to generate to pay for X, Y, or Z? So like, Conebeam is pretty easy, right? Like, let's say, I mean, Conebeams, what are Conebeams you're looking at costing? I don't even know, like 60, 70 grand, I would think.
Yeah. So I've looked at a couple. Obviously we have the Orthofos SL here, which I like. It's
what's
good.
That run now? 80, 90?
No, the Axios is around, I'm wanting to say 80 to 90, which is like Dentsply's newest
new
spaceship.
Do they still sell the SL?
They do. And like you can go to Renew Digital and get it for 50 grand.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, yeah, I mean, that's not bad.
I think that's what I'd do.
Well, so I looked at that and I'm still kind of weighing that versus like Vatek is one I've been looking at a lot. And, you know, Vatek's got their whole line, but the Green CT2 is the one I've been looking at. Their sensors right now are just kind of generations ahead of everybody.
And why Vatek?
They have a great warranty.
How did you hear about Vatek? Who do you know that has Vatek?
So I do have a friend from dental school who bought one who actually turned me on to a little bit. You'd mentioned it before. Yeah, you talked about it.
I don't know.
And then I went out to Center Point Dallas.
There it is. There it is. Yeah, That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, and I got to see all the Carestream, Vatek, the Merida, all that stuff.
So I point out this just for everyone's sake, just because I like to have transparency and in a buying world, you know, it's look, sales reps bring a lot of value to me and they help out my practice in a lot of ways, but I think not all sales reps are created equal. And the reality is that like you have to understand and appreciate necessarily maybe why things get brought up or discussed. So, you know, the reason I bring this up is because as what I see from the big picture is someone who's interested in maybe one product. Okay. That's the Sirona product. Mm-hmm. Who's working with a distributor in Benco to buy this practice. Mm-hmm. And guess what product they can't sell you?
Yeah, I know they don't do Sirona.
They don't sell you Sirona. So now all of a sudden this is just important for people to understand. It's not, there's pros and cons to this, but now I'm thinking about buying a piece of equipment that my rep or the guy that I'm going to use for my stuff can't sell me and can't support.
Yeah.
So now I got to bring in another distributor who works with that to then support that, who I may not be buying products from, and then you may not get as good support.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So it's just a challenge that you don't necessarily think about from like a big picture, just the political landscape of it. But in your case, it can affect it because the reality is you're going to be pushed more into a direction for better or for worse. I don't necessarily care. I'm just painting the landscape here.
Well, this has been one of those things we talked about where as an associate, I don't see, this is like, these are the hidden doors that no one ever, you know, and obviously.
Well, and most people don't know that. I mean, most people don't get that any, like they would just be like, yeah, my rep tells me that that's not a great machine. And he doesn't tell you it's because I can't sell it to you and I can only sell you these things. So, you know, you go down to Dallas and you go to Benco's headquarters and you look at, they got all their machines. And so then you're going to end up going towards one. I'm not saying that's better or for worse. Because it may be better, right? Like if for instance, you're committed to, you know, X rep that's helped you get the practice and supported you and has supported that practice for a while, which is important, maybe if the team likes them, I mean, whatever the reasons are, then that continued support might be worth something. And when it comes time for the number one piece of equipment in your office to function, you want to make sure that that's going to be functioning. And so that's always the catch 22 about buying used equipment versus buying new equipment versus buying, you know, from a dealer that can't distribute it to you. And obviously, you know how to use the Sirona product, which is a plus. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other cone beams out there that are good. But that's just food for thought.
Well, and that's one of the things I've been like, where I've always come in asking you, like, hey, I haven't had to deal with that part. So what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? In terms of, you know, I didn't understand, like, I knew there was Shine, you know, Patterson, Benco, Nashville Dental, you know, as the big, I would call those the big four, at least in Nashville.
Yeah, in this area.
And then you find, oh, well, you know, this group only distributes this group, right. You know, and then you start
to find
out.
Benco's going to tell you not to buy Cerec, or they're going to tell you to look at other products because they can't sell it to you.
Right.
So, you know, when you look at our practice, like, and I'll be transparent about our practice. So like we do mainly didn't we mainly work with Patterson and Shine because those are the ones that can service our equipment.
Right.
And so when you've got an office that relies so heavily on your technology working, you can't afford to be down. So you better believe that if our cone beam's down or if our Cerec's down, Patterson will be here at the drop of a pin just because we're a good client to theirs because we buy a lot of products from them outside of technology. If I was buying everything from Benco, let's say, or Nashville Dental, and then all of a sudden I had an issue, how quickly do you think Patterson's going to be getting over here?
Yeah, not
like they may not be dicks about it, but they're not going to be like they're not going to be running to my door like they have been on because of that. They know that hey. Like we're a big supporter of using their stuff. So it's just something to take into consideration. And so, and it's kind of like staying at hotels, right? Like you tend to stay at what hotels?
Marriott.
You're a Marriott guy, right? You don't stay at Hilton's because it doesn't make sense for you to spread that allegiance across multiple things. So that would be my advice it probably makes most sense to stick with one. What I would tell you is that the challenge you have is that for the most part, if you're if you go with Sirona Cone Beam and you go with Cerec, the challenge there is like the majority of your technology is driven by then it muddies that water of who you work with.
Yeah, so that was another thing I took away because you know obviously I've been working mainly with Benco, but knowing that they don't do Cerec, which Cerec's an absolute must have, right, for me anyways. And then cone beam possibly, you know, I don't know yet. I haven't made a final decision on that, but
I'll tell you in today's world, but cone beam is less important. So
you mean which cone beam or
yes.
Okay.
Well, it used to be, I think a couple of years ago it mattered more, but as long as your cone beam takes a good scan, the reality is they all export a DICOM.
Yeah.
They all can be sent to a lab to make a guide. To me, the cone beam is less important. As far as where it comes from these days.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, that you would know better than I in terms of that. I guess for me is like one of the big things I've taken away is like, don't like find your main guy and get some benefit out of being, that's your main guy. You know, like you say, buy it in there and of course you're more important than them. But I've also learned, especially in a small town like this, but don't only buy from one guy. Because you don't know what you don't know. And some other group might be able to help you in terms of support.
You always want to hear people out.
Yeah.
You always want to take the meeting.
Right. And so that's been something I've kind of learned quickly early on. And also, you know, it's always interesting because, you know, we won't name names, but let's say that rep A from, you know, company A comes in and they say, oh, you know, well, of course I can get you that, but here's the price for it. No one can beat that price. So just, you know, you just want to go ahead and do this. But if you go out and ask, you know, the next rep from company B, somehow they magically beat that number. You know what I'm saying? Learning to play that game a little bit. And not that you want to nitpick people or
nickel and dime. Yeah, I would say be careful with that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's funny how one tells you one thing and then other tells you another. And you kind of like, okay. And again, these are all, for me, the biggest things of just like being an associate and never having to deal with any of that to all of a sudden being in a situation where I'm at now and trying to quickly transition and get things set up so that I can go in there and practice similar to what we do here. So everything I'm trying to do is fairly quick. And, but at the same time, you're being thrust into a world you didn't know about, and you have no experience in. So that's kind of, you know, again, that's just the same theme. It's been something, learning the political landscape of things is important. And when you have some, like I've been asked, like, that's why I always ask you questions, or your dad, or, you know, I know one or two other guys in the area. Cause that's also another thing I've learned is that different areas is different.
Yeah. I mean, that may matter more. All right. What else you got?
Making changes with the team. So this team has been at this practice forever, you know, it's a good old country practice, and the team does not want to retire. They're not quite as old as the doc was. So, you know, realistically you expect they'll work another 10 years, maybe, I don't know. But something like that, obviously the way it's been run out there versus what I would like to do are going to be different. And so on some level, how do you, you know, do you go in and some would say, hey, go in and wait 6 months to a year before you change a thing. Others would say,
yeah, I think that, I mean, well, you know, keep going.
Well, others would say, you know, go in there and, you know, make clear what you want to get to be and work with people, but kind of start moving it that way. Or some would say, just go in and do what you're going to do and make it happen, make it, rip the bandaid off, and whatever happens is there's going to be some fallout, but you deal with it and move on.
Well, it's just a calculated decision. So it's almost like a 30, 60, 90, 6 month year kind of process. And that, like, the reality is that in practices like this, typically that your team won't look, you'll have no team members from this team in 24 months. I mean, that there's a high likelihood of that, or maybe one, just based off how they've worked, what your expectations are going to be, what their expectations are going to be. Like, I always say, like, there's a reason that new football coaches basically clean house and bring in their own people. You know, maybe now what you can't do, especially in a small town, I don't think, is you can't just go in there and clean house. I mean, there's a lot of patients that are loyal to those hygienists and those team members. So you want to maintain order for a while. But all that's just dependent on how successful you're being, how well cash flow is happening.
Yeah.
You know, and how much of that's being attributed to the team versus how well the new patients are taking to you, what their other options are. You know, I would say what I tend to do more, what happens more is you need to keep those key, that main hygienist, that main front office person. The assistant's probably less important there from that standpoint, unless they've been there maybe a really long time. But I think those are, I would tell you that I tend to maybe build around the team versus replacing the team. Mm-hmm. So meaning I'm going to hire new people. And then as those new people start to take on and do well, then I can let go people.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to swap people.
Right. Well, and to be clear for me, like, I don't want to lose a single member of the team. And I think you would agree with that, but are there going to be changes in terms of the way the practice is being run?
Yes. And those changes, I would tell you that I would be upfront with and just, but I would, you just have to, you've got to caution your change. I mean, there's change fatigue is real, meaning you will overwhelm your team members, you know, relatively quickly. I mean, if you tell a hygienist, like, you want her to take new patient photos on every patient that comes in the door, that's going to be overwhelming. So you're gonna have to pick and choose how you do that. But I would be upfront with what your expectations are.
Yeah. Well, another thing, so, like, in his current situation, he's got two part-time hygienists and the two other people. So in the short term, you know, I've spoken with everybody, you know, there, all the team members, and basically they know that the practice is not running well, but they've said, like, you know, normally we, you know, in the past we've had two assistants, two front desk people, and two hygienists.
Yeah, they may be excited to have new blood in there.
Well, you know, they would seem to, you know, you never really know until you're in there. But, like, for me in the current scenario, the hygienists appear to be booked out several months already because, again, they have a full book of patients. They just haven't had anybody to do the dentistry. So they've been referring out a lot. And so my first thought was, well, do I go in and try and hire another assistant early on so that we can operate two chairs, you know, one chair being the main chair like we do here, and then a second chair where we can do emergencies, limiteds, and you know, new patients off the street? Or do I go hire another hygienist? And since each of one of the other ones there now are only working part time. Bring in the new hygienist, so now I've got space to see new patients.
I mean, look, when you're going to be going into a growth phase, and when you're in a growth phase, it's all, like what we would say when we coach people is you always want to be overteamed by at least one team member. So when you're in growth phase, being overteamed by at least one team member. So now ideally that's probably a assistant that could be kind of front office assistant overload. And then hygienists can be built based off hygiene demand. So yeah, I mean, if those hygienists are booked out 6 months and they can't get new patients in, I mean, you know how important new patients are.
Yeah.
And so then you look at maybe hiring a part-time hygienist or another full-time hygienist. I mean, we would typically hire somebody and then say, hey, like, you're a hygienist that I'm hiring, but some days you may be answering the phone up front or even sterilizing stuff for the doctor's chair or seating a doctor's patient just because we're trying to build the volume. Now, we're still paying them as a hygienist.
Yeah.
So you're having to front it. So a lot of these questions, it's also difficult to answer without kind of understanding the financial flexibility that you have personally and knowing, okay, well, you know, how long is, you know, your wife planning on working? How long is, you know, are you going to buy, you know, what's that new house look like? You know, what's your current cash flow to say, okay, well, can you afford to expedite growth?
Yeah.
By fronting more like every dollar that's coming in, you're putting back in.
Yeah.
And what's the balance of what you need to take versus the growth? Because I've always been in the mentality that like, I'm going to take what I need to live, but then I'm going to reinvest everything.
Yeah.
And that's how we've grown so fast. Now, the negative to that is you're not necessarily reaping all the rewards of what you're doing because you're rehedging. And so there's probably a balance there that's like, okay, well, let's hire, you know, one team member and see what that does. But the general consensus is you want to be one team member over your need in growth phase.
Okay. There's probably the main part I'm not looking forward to as an owner is like essentially doing the hiring and firing and dealing with people.
Yep.
That has been the greatest part about being as an associate is I always get to be the good guy who just sits in the corner.
You're in for it. It's going to be great.
Yeah. So next thing I've got, CE. Obviously, you know that I've got endless CEs I love to take and do and whatever. And it's been great here being able to do that. But, you know, so with a skill set like I've got now where I can do pretty much most anything you would want to as a general practitioner before really delving into the specialties a little bit, do you continue to take the CEs? And I'm not talking about, you know, $1,000 CEs. I'm talking about the $5,000 and $10,000 ones like we do where we go for a week or whatever and learn some new skill set in the first year or two, or do you kind of put that on hold and say, hey, you know what? Obviously, you know, I want to keep growing, but like in this current phase, I'm going to put my face to the grindstone a little bit and kind of like bear down and just try and grow this thing quickly.
It's a great question.
I'll use one for example, that'll kind of give you some frame of reference. So like the big one that I've been wanting to do, which, you know, is Periolase and Lanap.
Yeah.
That's been something that I've just had interest in wanting to do. And obviously can be something you can bring to your practice that is beneficial.
What I would tell you is that the best thing you could do for the first 2 years is figure out how to communicate and sell dentistry. The biggest challenge you're going to have, Jackson, and I mean this like very kindly, which normally means that like it's going to not sound kind, is what I think we've done. It's a blessing and a curse that we've done here is that for the most part, we don't ask our associates to really close much dentistry, meaning that the systems are so set up so good from a financial standpoint, making things affordable, to our hygienist setting doctors up with, you know, handoffs and photos, that you haven't had to, at this point, sell a lot of your dentistry.
Right.
You haven't had to close a lot of your dentistry. Like your schedule's gotten filled by the nature of just an overflow of dentistry that people are saying yes to.
Right.
So that's going to be the number one hardest thing that you got to go to, is because when you go, when, as soon as you walk in that door that day, you are, the buck stops with you. You're the guy, you're the closer, and you're, the reality is probably most of your team isn't that great at setting up stuff out of probably insurance driven dentistry. And so what I would tell you is that anything that you can do to improve your communication, whether that's role-playing, books, CE courses, and your diagnosis ability and your systems around that, that will move mountains compared to you adding another skill set, another clinical skill set. I mean, the majority of doctors we work with have great skill sets, and they underachieve in all skill set areas because of their lack of diagnosis and communication. Makes sense. To me, that's the one that is where you should, it's the least flashy, but moves the needle the most, is if you're only getting, you know, a mediocre case acceptance for larger treatment plans, then bringing in a different skill set or more patients with marketing or anything else is going to be you're only going to continue to get the mediocre case acceptance.
Yeah.
So to me, that's where the most improvement you have to do. And the one thing that we've probably held you back from the most, just because of the timeline that you were here, like you're getting to that point where we'd like to like see more of that. So to me, I would tell you for the first 24 months or 12 months, you know, outside of going to course, I know you're already going to, I would focus very little on clinical, very little, okay, almost nothing. I would focus all on the other side of things.
Well, that's obviously the benefit. Like, I'm not worried about clinically just handling day-to-day dentistry just because of all the CEs and all the learning I've done here, which has obviously been, you know, the greatest parts about having mentorship and associate role. That's what I would tell anybody coming out of school. Look for, you know, go look for any associateship where you can have mentorship, because that's been great. That definitely helps with your confidence. Because, like, obviously, the systems have sold the big cases.
Yeah.
And you're right, I haven't had to do any of that. And on the little stuff, I mean, we don't even have to sell anything in terms of just, throwing the pictures up on the screen and having the confidence to know what you're talking about. They don't even question it. They're just
Oh, and you're going to be so busy doing insurance-driven dentistry that you're going to get on a hamster wheel pretty quickly. And so, like, and again, I think the other challenge you're going to have is, like, and again, I say this respectfully, but, like, you're going to be successful despite yourself early on, meaning that, and that's not against you, that's against anybody, that because there's such an overflow of probably needed dentistry in this practice because of not neglect, but just like lack of staying up to speed and like kind of whatever, that there's going to be a lot of dentistry to do. And so, like, I wouldn't be surprised if you get close to $1 million in your first year. And so you're going to feel really good when you take a $400,000 or $500,000 practice to almost $1 million in your first year. But I would caution you and say, well, this is just the beginning of the potential, because otherwise what you do is what happens to people is they get on this hamster wheel of now you're just general grinding dentist doing that. And I'll tell you when you should bring on Lanap or something like that is when you're trying to make the jump from 1 million to 1.5, bringing on the associate. Like, that to me is when you make that big of a clinical jump. So I would say that, like, you can do it at any point. I just would tell you that, like, it probably makes the most sense in like a 2-year mark or something, because there's no reason that you shouldn't be looking to bring on an associate potentially in 2 years or so that you can do the same thing that we've done, which is you start to replace yourself so you can then expand your skill set.
Right. Okay. Break?
Yeah.
Can we take a break?
You need a break?
I'm going to get another beer.
All right, everybody. This is part one of apparently 2-part series. I hope you've enjoyed it so far. We'll touch a little more on a couple questions he has. And we'll figure out what his biggest fear is. Otherwise, we'll see you at the summit in May. Work smarter, not harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.